Hello and welcome to the TNW podcast, the show in which we discuss the latest developments in the European technology ecosystem and feature occasional interviews with some of the most interesting people in the industry. My name is Andriy Degeler. I am the head of media at TNW.
And I'm Linnea Algen, senior editor here at TNW.
Linnea, it's great to have you back. We missed you so much last week. How are you feeling?
Thank you. As I'm sure our listeners and you can hear, while I have recovered from last week's flu, my voice is still straggling a little bit behind, but I'm feeling 1,000 times better than I did a few days ago. So all good. How are you, Andy?
That's great to hear. I feel like I may be going into some voice losing type of situation soon. I had some throat pain yesterday and it's still sort of scratching a little bit. So we will see. If you don't hear from me next week, dear listeners, that means that I have succumbed to something like that.
Well, stay tuned and find out.
At least we're taking turns. At least we don't yes, go down together.
So there is that. And a big thank you to Joanna for stepping in and filling my shoes last week.
It was quite perfect. So in today's episode, we are going to discuss the availability of AI compute, Getir's imminent departure from Europe, quite some cash for German game developers, and much more. You will also hear an interview with Oleksandra Balkova, general partner and head of portfolio at startup Wise Guys. But we'll start with a story that we did cover over the past 7 days. So, Alinea, what did you decide to highlight today?
Yeah, normally I'm on top of almost everything we publish since I edit almost all of it. But this week I found myself going over the stories that we published over the week that passed. And the one that stood out to me was that a Paris-based startup called Flex AI emerged from stealth. And I know what you're thinking, not another AI startup. But why I found this one interesting, as did our senior reporter Tom, who covered the story, is partly that they have a pretty sizable war chest, but also that they want to make AI compute more easily available to more developers than it is today.
And when we talk about AI compute, what exactly do we mean then?
So compute in this case refers to processing power and infrastructure and other resources needed to carry out computational tasks and executing machine learning models. So when generative AI first burst onto the public scene, a lot of people asked me if this meant that smaller companies or perhaps even smaller economies would be able to compete now in this field because, well, you know, everyone has a computer, right?
Of course.
But what the general public perhaps doesn't always realize is how much compute power you need to train AI, especially large language models such as GPT-4 or Llama 3 or even a Mistral 7b. So it is still something that is available only to a very select few with their own supercomputer kind of setup, or those who can pay for uptime on someone else's system and GPUs.
Which is very expensive, I suppose.
Yes.
So, okay. So Flex AI is going to solve this then. And what exactly do they propose?
So first, I will go on a little mini rant.
Please do go on.
Because in their description of what they're doing, they have committed what is currently to me a cardinal sin, which is they say that they are empowering builders everywhere to develop groundbreaking AI solutions with effortless access to universal AI compute. And I am just so sick of seeing empower everywhere. I think the most ridiculous one recently was a water bottle startup that said that they were empowering people to stay hydrated. It's honestly just such lazy marketing speech. Like a few years ago, everyone was going to disrupt everything. You know, now everyone's going to empower everybody.
And democratize.
Yes, democratize. Let's not forget about that. We have a few of those on our list here at the editorial team. But just please stop. Like, unless you're actually empowering a disenfranchised community or part of the population, say those that are denied the right to vote because of their ethnicity or gender, then please just stop saying that you are empowering someone. Like, end of rant. But back to what they are actually doing, which is pretty neat, I think. So Flex AI has the tagline, more compute, less complexity. And they have developed an on-demand cloud service, which is currently in beta testing with a handful of customers, and it's going to be released later this year, if everything goes to plan, I assume. So what it does is it takes the user's requirements and allocates it to whatever architecture accessible through the cloud that makes sense for that particular job. be that, you know, NVIDIA or Intel's Gaudi infrastructure or AMD's ROCm. And developers can then run their workloads and deploy AI models across multiple architectures. And this means greater use of existing hardware for cloud providers, but it will also enable more efficient allocation of financial and time resources in the development of AI products. What's more, developers will pay on a usage basis rather than renting GPUs on a dollars per hour basis. And this is really significant in terms of cost saving because access to compute can take up almost 80% of an AI-related startup's cash, essentially. So this will create a more efficient use of compute across a diverse hardware tech stack. And developers can then focus on building stuff without worrying too much about the back end and at lower cost, as we mentioned. And the idea, the grand idea of Flex AI is to bring AI compute infrastructure to the same level of simplicity that the general purpose cloud has reached over the last few years.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. And I really wish them good luck. But it does seem like this kind of endeavor would cost a lot of money to actually establish. And you said that they have a sizable war chest. So how do you define sizable? How did they do in terms of funding?
Well, in terms of seed funding, I'd say it's pretty sizable. They have 28.5 million euros in seed funding.
In seed funding.
Yeah, from a round led by Alpha Intelligence Capital, Leia Partners, and Hardcore Capital. Mm-hmm. And I think the story is also noteworthy from a sort of European AI sovereignty point of view. So the CEO and the co-founder, Brijesh Tripathi, he has worked for NVIDIA, Apple, Tesla, and Intel. And while he has been in France for some time, now he could have set up his company somewhere else, but mm-hmm. he chose to stay in Paris and do so.
And he actually lived in the US, right? I think he was based in California for quite a while.
Yeah, precisely. So this, I think, speaks to the growing AI startup scene in Europe, but also France in particular, which is obviously led by Mistral and the government approach to supporting these kinds of endeavors. And I feel it's exciting to see where this is going. I feel like there is mm-hmm. some great momentum at the moment.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And also, furthermore, I think that making AI training more efficient is in everyone's interest. Mm-hmm. Not sure about the accessible bit of it, but it can help combat the environmental costs to all of this LLM craze. Since 2012, the amount of compute used in the largest AI training runs has grown by more than 300,000 times. And according to some estimates, training and running AI might be responsible for as many emissions as India by 2030.
And mind you, India is not one of the lowest carbon dioxide emitters and generally
one precisely.
Of the lowest polluters.
I think
quite the opposite, in fact.
I think currently it's on the level of Ireland. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine like that kind of growth trajectory.
Oh, great. Yeah. So let's just hope then that Flex AI can get off the ground and really fulfill the promise that they have stated until now.
Absolutely. It will be very interesting to follow their trajectory, I think.
Right. And we can move to the story that we didn't cover. And what we didn't cover this week, but I still wanted to nevertheless highlight, the story itself, of course, has less to do with technology per se and more to do with the startup ecosystem and landscape in Europe. In this case, we're talking about the landscape of rapid grocery delivery services. Alinea, did you use any?
Yes.
Do you use any?
Not anymore. So I think that sort of is very representative of how they have been faring because we did during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of stuck with us as a matter of like convenience and laziness, I think, for a little while. But then once you start getting back to your everyday existence and you just start picking up groceries on the way home again, it sort of loses its appeal.
Right. So it seems like the people like yourself are actually responsible, at least partly, for the news that we're going to talk about.
For the quick rise and fall of the rapid grocery delivery system. Yes, I take full responsibility.
But I think you're quite representative in this case. It does feel this way, like across the people that that I know and have ever used it. I've never used it, by the way. For some reason, it never sort of had the appeal on me, mostly because during the pandemic, we lived in Groningen. And in the north of the country, and there I don't think we had any delivery work in the part of the city where we lived.
There you go. That is a pretty deciding factor.
It is. So back to the news itself. So earlier this week, Getir announced that it will be exiting Europe altogether. And in case you're not familiar, Getir is a Turkish company, and it has been quite dominant in the space of fast grocery delivery. Namely, the company is now pulling out of the markets of Germany, the UK, and the Netherlands. And according to an official statement, these markets only make up some 7% of its total revenue. But from now on, Getir will focus on its home country, that is Turkey, at least for the foreseeable future. And the announcement also means the complete shutdown of another company, and that is Gorillas. And that's the German startup that Getir acquired for 1.1 billion euros in December 2022.
That's a pretty quick downfall.
And a lot of VC money has been burned during this rise and fall of this entire category. So the departure of Getir and Gorillas, we can observe it from the market perspective and make jokes about it, but it does also mean, unfortunately, that a lot of people are about to lose their jobs. And according to Sky News and TechEU reporting, we are talking about some 1,500 people in the UK and another 1,800 people in Germany. I couldn't find information about how many people work for the company in the Netherlands, but I guess we can talk about a similar order of magnitude here. And for extra context, Getir had already cut 2,500 jobs worldwide last year, which at that time represented about 10% of its global workforce.
Wow.
So unfortunately, this has a pretty big impact to the geographies where the company was represented. It's also worth mentioning here that Getir is reportedly raising tens of millions of euros from existing investors in order to fund its departure from Europe and settling down back in Turkey and focusing on the market and maybe expanding to new cities. I'm not quite clear.
Expensive business it folding is. A company. I mean, so much for market consolidation. It's been more like a market collapse.
Yeah, it seems to be the case because the consolidation part was kind of predicted for a very long time when we first saw all the VC money coming into so many different startups. And the consolidation did also happen with, for example, Getir acquiring Gorillas. Yeah, but now it's going down within a pace that's even faster than anyone predicted, also due to market conditions, of course. But here in the Netherlands, where we both live, we're going to be left with only one fast grocery delivery operator, which is Germany-based Flink. So we are actually about to find out whether this model is viable at all, or it was just the VC money propping it up all along.
Well, I feel like this is your chance, André, to use the service since you haven't already.
You know, for me, I mean, I generally like to be an early adopter of all the different types of services and stuff. But for me, even starting using grocery delivery on a weekly basis was quite a big step. I was so used to supermarkets and the physical experience of it that it's already been a big step forward to just start using Picnic, which is one of the grocery delivery operators here. So I'm afraid Flink may go out of business before I decide to try it.
But what if they deliver by drone?
Okay. That's a totally different story. If a drone delivery operator comes to Amsterdam anytime soon, or Flink decides to pivot and do something like that, I will be among the first to try it. I promise. Now let's move on to our learnings of the week, Linnea. It is your learning this time. So what did you see? What did you notice?
It is. So I learned that since 2020, the German government has been giving out substantial cash rewards to game developers at the Deutsche Computerspielpreis. DCP, and I, if there was a video on me now, you'd see me cringing over my German pronunciation. My sincere apologies. But in English, it's the German Computer Games Awards. And those who win categories such as Best Family Game, Best Debut, Best German Game, etc., they also win cash prizes between 40,000 and 60,000 euros.
Oh, wow.
And the money comes from the Federal Ministry of Economy and Climate. And this year's awards ceremony was just held 2 weeks ago on the 18th of April. And Best German Game of 2024 was Everspace 2 from Rockfish Games. It's a single-player spaceship shooter. I haven't tried it, but it does have 9 out of 10 on Steam. So if that is your kind of thing, I'd definitely try it out. There was also a Best International Game category won by, surprise, surprise, Baldur's Gate 3 from Belgian studio Larian.
You must be very happy about it.
Well, I am in awe in general of the game, as you know, and so I'm not surprised, and I'm very happy for them. But there's no cash prize for that category.
I don't think they need much cash at this point, given the success of the game itself.
Oh, well, that might be true. That might be true. I hope so. Sven, I hope things are going well for you guys and you didn't feel sad about not getting more funding from the German Ministry of Economy. With the global gaming market expected to grow from around 200 billion euros in 2022 to over 400 billion euros in 2030, I think it makes sense that this is an industry that governments want to support.
No, absolutely. Interestingly, I actually learned two things from what you just said, one about the cash prizes and the other. Embarrassingly, I actually didn't know that Baldur's Gate was produced and created in Belgium.
Yes, Larian Studios, they are in Ghent.
Wow, that's great. That's really one more reason to be proud of the continent we live on.
Yes, and Benelux.
Yeah, exactly. I was just looking at Everspace 2 on Steam, by the way. It looks very nice. The demo looks very interesting, like the playthrough and the screenshots. It's a pretty expensive game. It's like 50 euros if you want to buy it right now. I can see at the time of the recording, it's minus 50%. You can have a pretty big discount.
Ooh.
So if this is something that you would normally like to play, this is definitely your chance to check out the best German game of the year 2024, according to the Ministry of Climate and Economy.
Well, I don't think it was the... I don't think the ministry actually decided who won the awards.
Oh, I
don't know if that's within their expertise.
Imagine the entire ministry just sitting and playing all the games to figure out who the winner is.
I mean, that doesn't sound like a bad existence. Enter civil servant, position,
hand,
and then that's
hand,
what you
yes.
end up with.
But on the other hand, I would watch the stream. I would definitely watch the stream of that process for a while,
yeah,
at least.
But at the same time, you kind of hope that maybe ministerial employees are busy doing other things with their time than playing video games. I don't know. But if you would like to see more game coverage on our site, then please let us know, because I will take the heavy burden upon myself to transition into game reviewer part-time.
Here is your career path right there. No, please do let us know indeed, because this is an industry that we don't actually cover all that much. But if it is interesting for the people listening, we'll be very happy to at least take a few deep dives throughout the next few months and see how the industry is doing. It must be quite fascinating, in fact.
Absolutely.
Now, let us move on to today's featured interview. That's the one with Alexandra Balkova, general partner and head of portfolio at the accelerator startup Wise Guys. I sat down with Alexandra at the TechChill conference in Riga a couple of weeks ago, and there we talked about a whole bunch of things, including the current state of VC industry, Ukrainian startups, defense tech, and much more. So here's our conversation in full. Please do enjoy. Alexandra, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
So can we first talk about yourself before we move to Startup Wise Guys and the venture ecosystem of Europe? Who are you? What had you been doing before you joined Startup Wise Guys? So everything around it.
Who the hell I am? I guess let's start from there. I am a human. So not an AI, not a bot. I am a human. I check the mark in
Google. You never know these days.
Yes, you never know. So I'm a head of portfolio and a general partner at Startup Wise Guys Fund. But before that time, I've been, let's say I am in the ecosystem, in the venture ecosystem for more than 9 years, mm-hmm. not yet 10, but more than nine. But my background before this whole thing was in communications and public relations. That's where what I was studying in the university, mm-hmm. Together with international relations, which was my uni. And then I worked on the commercial business side on the marketing departments in PR and comms. And then I fully switched the career and I went from like a C-level head of something in public relations to I called it like a girl who was writing what smart people say, because I was an assistant and everything. Mm-hmm. So like I fully switched to zero to start from scratch. And then I learned everything from just practice, because I had no idea what startups are, what investors are, what does it mean, what is the system. And and then I scrambled my way somewhere up.
Great. So what does it mean to be, so I understand the general partner part. What does it mean to be the head of portfolio of an accelerator?
It means that there's a bunch of startups where you invested. Mm-hmm. And in our case, the portfolio is very large. So unlike, I guess, the VC, mm-hmm. The typical VC that would have like 20, 30 to 50 maybe startups in the portfolio, we have 450 plus. And ask me, like in a week, maybe it's already 165 or something. So it is a growing number. But this, with the beauty of having a diverse community of many people from multiple countries, but it also comes with the challenges, with the scaling challenges. How do you support a lot of startups by being mm-hmm. one function, one organism? So my role, I'm not the only one. So we have two more people in my team. Mm-hmm. They're brilliant. And all three of us are working on the challenge of how to support these 400 plus companies on scale, helping them grow. Mm-hmm. So together with, of course, as any investor, we're providing also one-on-ones. We do the one-on-ones with startups, but one of the functions is like, okay, how do you help all of them? How do you define patterns which you would indicate well in advance to know who to focus on more, who needs support now, who would need support in 2 months, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and to kind of to build a system of helping startups grow, because as an investor, we are successful only if they are successful. So that's what we do.
Makes sense. Interesting. And startup wise, guys, so what is it today? Because like it used to be just an accelerator. Now I looked at the website, it says accelerator fund, if I'm not mistaken. So what does that mean? What's this language change manifest?
It comes with scaling. It comes mm-hmm. with just a different scale. So we are still an accelerator. That's our core, hardcore business. That's mm-hmm. what we do. But together with an accelerator, we now have more than one fund. So we have multiple funds, and mm-hmm. it's an accelerator with a group of funds. So we are combining, because we are pre-seed and mainly pre-seed, we can invest seed stage as well and some follow-ons on Series A, but we're still focusing 95% of mm-hmm. our efforts into pre-seed, which means that for us, having an accelerator is an arm to de-risk of our investments. So it comes with the knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. And I can talk a lot of that because I'm a big believer, and I'm, of course I'm biased, but I'm a big believer in accelerator models. I'm putting the parallels of that with an MBA and with the community and the network of smart people that you're getting, but also with the funds. So now, like earlier when we started, we had like SPVs and we were investing per mm-hmm. batch. Now we grew and now we have multiple funds, and we are combining a generalist approach with having a large fund, umbrella fund mm-hmm. that invests in B2B software with no restrictions, let's say. But we also combine with our smaller funds that operate under our brand, but that are specializing in specific field. So we have verticals. And then the startup that joins our acceleration program, it gets the funding from two vehicles as well, mm-hmm. Combining the access to a global network of generalist approach and having like opening doors in pretty much anywhere, since we have like more than 50 countries in the portfolio, plus a specialist approach with a fund that has the GPs and the people in the fund that are focused and that are skilled in a particular field. So for us, it's fintech, cybersecurity, extended reality, sustainability, Web3, and PropTech, which will be launched in autumn.
Okay, this is really interesting stuff. So these are all your programs. And so you focus more on themes than on particular technologies, for example.
Yes, we do focus. So it is still a B2B generalist fund, because even if a startup doesn't fit into a vertical, a field that where we have a focus on, there is a high chance they would fit in our generalist fund, because it is a B2B SaaS, but when you invest in pre-seed, any SaaS can transform into anything like a week later. So and you don't really have a control of that. So it's like B2B software, let's say. We do also have like hardware, a little bit of investment, but it's also, all of it, it's rather exceptions. So,
right.
Yeah.
So I just noticed the other day on LinkedIn that you were running a workshop to comment on and explain the recent State of Venture report to startups. So can you give me like a very quick lowdown? What is actually going on in the VC ecosystem around? What do we need to know?
Horrible. It's a horrible times. I mean, like, I'm not a... Anyways, the times are challenging, let's put it this way. But they're challenging a lot for the funds that are fundraising right now, because as we see the in Q1 2024, the amount of allocation that LPs do to the VC funds is dramatically lower compared to the previous year and the year before.
And that's globally.
And it's globally, yes. So all US, Europe, and UK follow the same trends. There's a little bit of differences. Let's say in Europe, there was a small growth in the quarterly allocation in the volume of investment in of money invested in Q1 compared to Q2 and compared to Q1 of the previous year. So there's a little bit of a growth, but it's still dramatically lower compared to like the previous. And it's the whole trend is like eight quarters of going down. And right now we're on the level of 2016, 17 of the investment. So it's like, it's hard.
It is hard.
It's hard. However, which explains all the correction. And basically for LPs, it's all there's the whole previous year was... it was like a lack of liquidity, let's say, on the market. So there's not enough exits, not enough APOs. And there's a huge correction in the valuations of the later stage companies. So there's a lot of things that are happening for LPs that are, let's say, that are touching, they're connected with LPs, why they're not, where they're cautious or they're waiting right now and allocating less for the VCs because they need to make portfolio changes, let's say, like, right? But on the other hand, for startups, so correction means that most of the investors are looking into numbers, right? So they're looking and expecting startups to be profitable, or to be able to be profitable suddenly. Soon. Suddenly, yes, exactly. Or to be able, I call it like to switch on and off your profitability so that like you're somewhere around break even and you can kind of control if you are burning more money, less, and like you can be adaptable there. However, and then this is all interconnected, right? So LPs are making way more due diligence on their VCs and places where they are allocate their money. And VCs do the same. They do sore due diligence on the startups where they allocate the money. But then if we see the numbers, the amount of dry powder that was accumulating on the from the funds that were raised in 2021-22 is still high. So the amount of allocations that VCs done last year as well was still lower and this quarter also lower, which means that for startups, but it's like the strongest will survive, right? So for startups that are in a bad shape right now, it's probably really not a good time to go and fundraise, and they have to work dramatically on the kind of getting the money from the customers. While for the startups that are, that have healthy unit economics, now might be even the better time to fundraise, because there will be there will be outstanding compared to the other startups, and they might be able to tap in the amount of dry powder larger, so they might have the opportunity to get like access to the follow-ons to like more than like their competitors, let's say. But it is correction. It's like going back to the healthy economy, I'd say.
And so this is on the global level, and how do you see it play out in the Baltics? Is it the same thing?
Technically, yes. So I would say that we do follow the same patterns. However, yesterday on the event, it was quite interesting. So there was an investor event before on the day zero of the conference, and there was a slide with the evaluations actually on the industry standards, and thank you Praktika and everyone else that were creating that report. So there were slides with a comparison of the evaluations on the pre-seed and seed compared to US, Baltics, and Europe. And then the fun fact is that the difference between the US evaluations on the pre-seed stage compared to pre-seed in Europe is like twice plus, two and a half times.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, I think, I don't remember, but it was like 5.4 million on pre-seed in the US and like 2.3 in Europe. But Baltics was higher.
Europe's average.
Yes, exactly. Huh. So Baltics was like 3.3 million something on pre-seed. But what is even more interesting is that the US valuations in seed stage were something like 10.4 million something. Then Europe average was 5 point something million. And then Baltics was close to US. Baltic seed stage companies, according to the research that friends, partners, and ecosystem players did, is way closer on the seed stage to the US valuations versus Europe, which is interesting. And there could be different explanations, which I don't know and I don't have. But one of the assumptions was that on one hand, it actually shows that, and this is true, that the ecosystem is very nurturing and good for pre-seed seed stage startups. It's actually a very good ecosystem and people and founders know they have access to successful companies, they have access to knowledge, and they have access to like advice and feedback on how to bring build greater companies. But another thing is that Baltics as an it always had like a higher demand towards having sustainable metrics, which might mean that the Baltic companies on the seed stage are actually can show way larger metrics on their revenues compared to average Europe, and they would be like on the similar valuations than the US. But yeah, so Baltics is more expensive than Europe.
So the Baltic startups had healthy unit economics before it was mainstream.
Yes.
Great. Okay, another topic I wanted to talk about is, so it's been over two years since Russia's full-scale invasion began of Ukraine. And I know that Sarah Wiseguys has been very involved in supporting Ukrainian startups in general. So what has it been? What has it been like over the past 2 years?
Yeah, so it is also connected with the fact that I'm Ukrainian. So on the C-level in the Wiseguys team, we have a lot of nationalities, but we have a bunch of Ukrainians in the team. And it was impossible for us like not to keep supporting the company, because on our management, on the GP level, we have, together with other countries, we have also Ukraine. So we kept investing, and we kept investing in startups that are located in Ukraine. It's both including like Ukrainian founders that were outside, but also with the companies that founders are in Ukraine. And we made a few investments with founders that we never saw in person. So they were there and they're still there. So I think from the first, in the past 2 years, we did like 15 investments in the Ukrainian startups, something like that. So right now, the total number of investments we have with the Ukrainian founders is, I think it was like 45 or close to 50 across the whole portfolio and historically. So since day one of Wiseguys in existence. But I haven't seen recent numbers, but at least a year ago, we were the largest investor, private investor in Ukrainian companies by number of investments. And the larger was only Ukrainian Startup Fund, which is a governmental organization, right? So we're not the largest investment by the volume, because we're investing the small checks in the, or not small, good pre-seed checks with 100K in the pre-seed seed stage companies. But yeah, plus recently we've been, we just finished, also graduated pretty much like yesterday. We ran the program for Ukrainian early scale-ups that was powered by EBRD. So we actually had the full program for 10 plus Ukrainian startups that got like our core value, the knowledge and the on getting to that, to other markets with our support. And we also became a part of the tech system recently. So I will be also taking their more active role starting from, I think, May.
What is it?
It's an organization that basically lobbies Ukrainian, mainly product companies and startups. So historically, Ukraine has been built on outsourcing companies. Yeah. And then historically, it was always the case. There was not enough support for product companies. So the tech system is combines the players in both investors and maybe, let's say, successful product companies that are there to unite. that they are to support Ukrainian product side of the tech ecosystem and help startups grow and as well get the international players, get international investors and have the support, the knowledge and support and be united within the product ecosystem. So, yeah.
And within the accelerator, do you see still see the same kind of flow of applications coming from Ukraine?
Pretty much. Pretty mm-hmm. much. So it didn't change much. Probably what changed is the topic of the vertical of the startups that are applying, because there's obviously a lot of defense tech, mm-hmm, military mm-hmm. tech, cybersecurity tech startups that were born in the past 2 years. And from the vertical perspective, this is just the growing number that you would see coming from Ukraine more. Mm-hmm. But in general, it's also no knowledge that cybersec and defense tech is growing, not only in Ukraine, but also in Europe as well. And
yeah, today in the morning at the opening of the conference, we saw the Minister of Defense of Latvia also talking about defense tech being an important part of development of the ecosystem. So is it something that you're seeing Baltics-wide, that the importance is getting higher?
Yeah, as well, for sure. I think Baltics is taking the invasion way more seriously than mm-hmm. Europe. And there's way more governmental and individual, meaning companies and personal people support compared to Europe. I think they just know that the urge is way closer to them compared to other countries that don't have the border line with mm-hmm. With Russia. So for sure, we have it as well. We see it as well here, and we have also cybersecurity fund, mm-hmm. and we opened the vertical of cybersecurity before it became the trend. So in 2019, mm-hmm. And since then we had some mostly cybersec, but a little mm-hmm. bit of defense, a little bit of military tech startups, and they are now, of course, also getting there.
Right. What else is in the timeline? What are the what does the Startup Wise guys have in store for this year?
The rest of the things are not that specific. So mm-hmm. like for us, one of the things is that we're trying to open the new vertical every year, mm-hmm. and this year it's PropTech.
Right.
So in autumn we'll launch PropTech. We also are looking now at the shelter tech startups actually as a part of PropTech, which is also coming from the same need of developing this, the creating products for people who lost their homes.
I didn't know the shelter tech was a thing. Now
I didn't know either.
We need to cover it now.
But but it's not. It's just it's very in the very early stage of development. So it's prop tech. It's not yet launched, and shelter mm-hmm. tech is something that we opened the applications for. But it's brand new. It's like 2 weeks new something. So it's mm-hmm. super maybe a month new. But I think it's a very obviously a very big need there as mm-hmm. well. So this, at least, this is something that you can definitely create like an impact with as well, while being a VC investor, investing in commercial companies. But these commercial companies will make a difference on people's lives for sure.
Right.
So that thing, this is again brand new, and then we have also fintech, which is also one of our largest verticals that we. So basically, out of the programs that are now opened, is fintech, not open, but we're scouting and fundraising for the fintech, cyber, sustainability, and proptech.
Mm-hmm.
So this.
Alexandra, thank you so much. Thanks a lot for answering the questions, and thanks a lot for taking the time.
Thank you.
Once again, big thanks to Alexandra for finding the time to come on the show. For now, this is all we have time for in this episode of the TNW podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you like our show, please help us spread the word. Tell a friend or colleague about the podcast and follow our updates on social media. Just search for The Next Web and you will find us. Music and sound engineering for this podcast done by SoundPulse. Please feel free to email us with any questions, suggestions, and opinions. We're always at podcast@thenextweb.com. I am Andriy Degler.
And I'm Linnea Algin. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Bye-bye.